and friend of the Town Hall Academy from Remarkable Results Radio. You know it, the only original weekly single subject forum for the forever aftermarket student. Carm Capriotto here, and we are talking training today and into the future and the fact that the pandemic has forced us to rethink, actually break the box on how we get training and how we uphold knowledge transfer and accountability in a more virtual training world. I can tell you this, we had some deep think in this episode, and it will help you see what is necessary to provide your technicians and or yourself the type of and proper training as technology, hey, it's moving faster than the speed of sound. Here's a shout out to my friends at Shopware. Hey, you know, it's easy as 1, 2, 3. Shopware's shop management system allows customers to review, approve, and even pay for repairs all in one place. Keep your staff and your customers safe while maintaining profits and keeping your customers happy. Now learn more at getshopware.com. Hey, we're working hard to share the voices, ideas, and insights that are shaping the future of the aftermarket. And this episode is no exception. Find the key talking points that will make a great meeting agenda at remarkableresults.biz/A173. Now, here's a taste of what's to come.
So I virtually took that group of students to the car with a scan tool, and instead of it being a room of 20 where nobody could see unless they were standing in the front row, everybody could see the tool because they had their own screen right in front of them.
Hello, friend, Carm Capriotto, the Aftermarket Podcast Guy, where we've cataloged, you know, every single one of the 750-plus episodes by series and keywords right on our website. Hey, thanks for being a big fan of the Aftermarket's original and premier podcast. I hope you're listening mobile and on your most favorite podcast listening app. And if you're not, you can get a free app at remarkableresults.biz/subscribe. So honored to have you as a listener as we strive weekly, as I said, to give you relevant wisdom and insights to help you grow your business acumen every day. And hey, could you do me a favor, please? I'd like you to take a very, very short survey. It will help me continue to understand you and to formulate the evolving podcast so you continue to get extreme value. It's simple. Go to remarkableresults.biz/survey, and I thank you. Hey, Rich Falco came to me with this Academy topic, and I was hooked. Who wouldn't want to listen to a discussion on Training 2020 and Beyond, Future Techniques and Strategies? Now, he brought along Jim Kokonis and Matt Fonslow. You know me, I'm a very curious person, and I want to learn something new every day. This episode brought out both of those traits for me. In fact, I got more than I anticipated, and I believe so will you. Look, the challenges we have now and into the future regarding training are so apparent in this episode. Will you shift and adapt to the many ways of acquiring training into the future? Will we be changing how we deliver knowledge? Do we need to let some of our old training techniques die? Will we embrace career pathing? And will shop owners be more supportive and pay for training? Some of these answers and more are here for you right now. Today, we chase Training 2020 and Beyond, the Future Techniques and Strategies. Excited to have my panel here today. So much going on in my world. My hair is growing beyond what it is normal. Boy, look at my panel here. Rich Falco, instructor, CarQuest Technical Institute, ASE Master Tech L1. Only 25 years, right? Give or take.
Thank you. I'll take 25. Sure.
Got it. Jim Kokonis, CarQuest Technical Institute, God, since about 2007, and you're a senior curriculum developer for CTI.
Started full-time working at the Research and Development Center in January of 2016.
Good to have you here, man. And Matt Fonslow, shop manager, lead diagnostician, Riverside Automotive, Red Wing, Minnesota. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
Rich brought me this topic, and of course, he brought on Jim and Matt. I thought about it. I said, well, this is a great topic. So every time we have a topic like this, I write down stuff that I want to know from my guests. Virtual versus leader-led, is this kind of learning made for everyone because we all have differing ways we learn? Is the travel expense issue going to be, ooh, I can save some money, older versus younger and the different ways we all learn? What type of training, refresher, new update requires online leader-led? Another thought of mine. And what about the attention span that we all have when we watch TV or computers, and a nut or a squirrel goes this way, and we lose some really great content. And someday, guys, are we ever going to have online training with some kind of testing so that we can actually say, I spent a few hours with this great trainer, but I'm not sure I learned anything. So I'm wondering if there's going to be any kind of learning management systems that goes along with all of this. And I know many of the big companies do. So without further ado, Matthew, I just want to kick the ball over to you and let you lead it.
I was kind of dumbfounded when they reached out to me, specifically Rich and Jim, to be a part of this. You know, why me? You know, honored. But when they proposed that question to me, the future of training, immediately my mind went kind of selfishly, oh, they must mean after this COVID-19 thing and, you know, presuming there is a new normal or a normal return to normal. And then also technology-wise, not specifically vehicle technology, but the technology available even now to deliver training. So my knee-jerk reaction to them was whether this is the, you know, the government opens up everything and just says, all right, we're back to normal. Or everybody just gets sick of the, not of the COVID-19, but sick of waiting, sick of the lockdown, that we kind of go back to normal, that I felt training, for the most part, would remain unchanged, that we would still have instructor-led trainings and stuff like that. Not positive about overall attendance to the, like the big events where we have, you know, 1,000 techs, are people willing, or 1,000 attendees. Will they still have 1,000 attendees? I kind of think they will. The other way I went was, have you ever heard of or used something called Oculus, namely Oculus Rift or Oculus Quest? These are VR headsets, and PlayStation or Sony has them that works with the PlayStation 4 as well. But if you've ever had a chance to put one of these on, the realism is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And I felt kind of strongly to right away when talking to these guys. They're really cool. We had kind of a meeting before this, and I tossed these ideas out. And, you know, lucky me, these guys are really smart. They really opened my eyes because what they want to talk about is much deeper than where I was heading. But the VR headsets, I think, will become more and more popular as the prices keep dropping. They're in the $500 range, I think, right now, give or take. And then the real lead-in will be not only with gamers, but I think sports fans. I think that might be the new way we see watch sports is if your favorite team is playing and you want the best seats in the house, you can't afford the thousands of dollars tickets. Well, maybe for $100, you can sit on your couch with a VR headset and you're essentially there. Best seat in the house.
Do you see training in the automotive?
Yes.
Okay.
Pick your favorite trainer or the trainer you think is the best, or even a trainer you want to see. Depending on where you live or the situation you're in, what are the chances you could see them live? It might be really limited. So then now you're watching maybe their videos and there's no interaction. Well, there's a very real possibility, very, very real, of attending such a class virtually. You got your headset on. It's like you're in the classroom and you can interact with the instructor, maybe even with the other attendees.
Yeah.
It's coming, I think that's a very real thing.
I did an episode with Derek Kaufman on this entire thing, and even people that are writing software and code that are in the automotive. I mean, the oil rigs trainers are getting taught as if they were on a real live oil rig.
I went. And then talking to these two, which I want to kick it over to them now. Yeah, my eyes were opened, which I kind of enjoy that.
It's amazing. You guys probably were never home, and now the wife wants to kick you out. And so you're home. See, Rick says yes. You had a great job. You were never home for 3 days a week. I loved it.
Yeah, I was on the road 4 days or in front of people 4 days a week. And
4 days a week.
I haven't done that since Vision. Was the last time I taught. So I've been home since early March when usually I'm home for 2 or 3 days at the most. So it's been an interesting change.
So you guys as a company, CTI, had to figure this thing out and really continue to bring the training that you would normally do leader-led to the masses. Love to hear about that and then how this evolves into our new world.
When I came on board, and probably one of the reasons why Chris says good luck is because I tend to freethink almost everything and got in trouble in my youth for telling somebody that 20 years ago something changed. I was born. We don't do it that way anymore.
By the way, you and I get along really well because I'm very much like that. Okay.
Okay. When I came on board, one of the areas I was interested in looking at was new ways of delivering material to students, new ways of making sure you asked a question, which is really key to a lot of the questions we ask ourselves as developers is how do we validate and confirm that learning has taken place?
Yep.
I think a lot of people, you know, you had a group that was talking about teachers and instruction and how they learn their craft and that sort of thing. And then the next part of that conversation for me becomes, how has our craft changed? Are we still teaching the same thing we've taught for 30 years, or do we need to change? How many of the current technicians are going to be rebuilding alternators in the shop? How many people are actually going to tear down and rebuild a transmission? We probably have students in school now that will never open a package of PlastiGauge. And yet they'll be taught that. They'll be taught that in a traditional program, and it will consume time and resources, but that has become now more of a specialty. And so the questions we're constantly asking ourselves, and through talking with our clients, our customers, our members, people that come to training, is, you know, how do we validate what we're teaching? Can you take this back to the shop and use it tomorrow or next week? Do we offer options? So we're constantly looking at that. So we're looking at delivery methods and we're looking at content. And so we started last year standing up a studio before all of this, where we had cameras and recording equipment and screens, and we started to build some content. Rich and I are working on a Skunk Works project together, which you'll hear about in the near future. And we were doing a lot of that through video and audio because that's the only way you can really teach the topic we're working on. And then we had certain clients that were interested in distance learning to reach more of their teammates. So we were kind of already headed down this path, and then boom, this pandemic hits. And distance now we're like, learning. how do we stay in touch with our students?
Jim, distance learning is a word that's been around for a long time. Okay. It's been there forever. And I think it's COVID has made that fashionable.
Yeah. I think you can look at the fact that by early in March, you couldn't go into a Best Buy or an office supply store and find a webcam. Try and find a good quality webcam right now. You might find something in 1080p, but 4K has gone through the roof.
Yep.
Switchers and other cameras, extra monitors, places are sold out of desks because everybody was setting up from home. And so I think the new normal will be different. It seems like there are businesses all over the country, not just in automotive, that are figuring out, you know, we can actually do some of these things effectively from a distance. But there are challenges. Many of us have sat in on webinars for years, and they are just a download of information, a lecture. At least when I talk with Rich or I have conversation with someone like Matt, I'm sitting here saying, what is our role as the teacher? Are we there to just download information at the students for a block of time and go, look at all this smart stuff I know? Or are we there to help them collate and be cohesive with the information they have? We listen to the questions they have. We ask them questions to test where their knowledge level is, so we know, are they ready to go to that next topic, or do we just keep driving for that next, I got to get through these slides because that's my job. So there's huge conversations going on with that. And can it be done through a format like this?
Probably not good. You see that?
I got the check mark.
Yeah, it's a check box. Yeah, I attended training, check the box. Next. Yeah, I went home, I watched the 2-hour thing. I actually only watched a half hour because
got the certificate.
Is there a certificate to get? Are you guys giving out certificates or not?
With what we're doing right now, like when Rich did a sample of an electrical tools application class, there was no certificate for that. When I did the two different versions of an air conditioning training topic. There was no certificate for that. What we're doing at this point in time is basically proof of concept. So these are some of the technologies we have the capability of. When I ran the air conditioning class that first week, we used the Zoom platform. It was in a webinar, but I had information and things staged. I'm sitting here in front of three screens right now, and I had information staged on a screen to the right. I had a secondary camera input that actually had a scan tool connected to it. I had a Bluetooth module in a car out in front of my house. I had my lovely assistant wife start the car and engage the air conditioner. And I was able to switch leave the screen that I was sharing up. And I had a preview out of some software, and I put up live data out of the scan tool in the middle of the class. So I virtually took that group of students to the car with a scan tool. And instead of it being a room of 20 where nobody could see unless they were standing in the front row, everybody could see the tool because they had their own screen right in front of them. And so I think we're learning some lessons about how to effectively deliver, whether it's live in person or in this virtual environment, because we can do things better with new technologies and then still make sure we're testing for knowledge and understanding.
I love what you just said about the testing, the accountability, the knowledge transfer piece. Love that. And to me, that's not that hard to do. Create the test, get the learning management system, and make sure the students are doing it right. And if not, adjust the class, adjust the trainer, whatever has to happen. One of the things that I loved what you said, and Rich, I'm not sure if this is also in your wheelhouse, is that you've learned how to do Bluetooth and studio stuff and switchers and cameras. I don't think
everything but green screen.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has an idea. Well, you're going to have to work on that, Rich.
It was a crash course, and it was probably 2 weeks of Zoom meetings with Jeff Miller and Jim and getting cameras ready. And then I'm going to present a class, and I want to do the same thing Jim is doing. I want to put up polls and ask the guys questions and get live feedback. So I know they got it. Let's zoom on. Or, whoa, everybody got that question wrong. Let's back up and let's slow down and let's throttle the class appropriately, as Anthony Williams would say. So there's a learning curve to doing these correctly, because if you just put up a 45 minute or an hour recording and there's absolutely no give and take, number one, I'm dying. I'm used to standing in front of a room full of guys, and maybe they're giving me a hard time. Maybe they're asking great questions, but I'm given that give and take. I can see as an instructor and as an attendee, you just, without that feedback, you just zoom out. So you've got to figure out a way to make it interactive, or as interactive as possible.
Hey, today's pandemic is causing so much stress and uncertainty for everyone right now, especially shop owners. Now, how do I make sure that my staff and my customers stay protected while still moving cars through the bays? Contactless service is our new normal, and having a shop management system that not only supports this, but actually helps your business thrive through it all is key. Shopware's digital workflow with remote pay will provide that solution for you. Amy Matinet from Auto Craftsman recently commented on social media, and I quote, "I can't even express how grateful I am that I jumped on board with Shopware on January 1st. Would have never guessed that I would be the only one writing service at my shop, as I haven't worked in the shop for the last 15 years. But she goes on and says, I'm running my shop nonstop every day with Shopware to help me not only get the job done easier and faster, but am totally wowing my customers." End quote. Hey, if you want to wow your customers too, request a demo at getshopware.com. Do we need to let some of the old training ideas and techniques die?
Absolutely. I taught at a technical school before CTI. And day one, I was basically handed a book, handed a class, said, there you go. By the way, get numb. And this is the automotive director. I turned to him and I said, what do you mean get numb? And he goes, if you care or give a crap, they're just going to eat you alive. They don't need to be in the shop. Everything they can learn is in that book. And just follow my program and they'll be good. And I was horrified. That is how that program is run today, which is why I'm not there anymore. I could spend the 3 hours telling you stories of students rebuilding alternators and master cylinders, which don't know why it's still being taught that way. And there's a, not all schools. I don't want to get myself in trouble here. There's a school 20 minutes south that's doing it right. But the school in my hometown is that stereotypical burnt out technician putting in his time, working for retirement, and he doesn't care. Just, here's the NATAF guidelines. That's what we're going to teach, and off you go. We have a, what's it called? The advisory committee.
Yep.
And we have shops coming in complaining that our students don't know how to change tires and some of the basics, and mm-hmm. they've never held a scan tool in their life. And the administration treats it as that meeting as a formality. Oh yeah. Okay, great. We'll do something about that. And then just nope, back to business as normal. And that happens at a lot of schools. That's got to change.
The bad part is the most interaction I have with technical colleges right now is, you know, being on an advisory board. I think what you're saying is essentially rewind back to maybe the 80s, 90s, and what that curriculum is essentially being taught now.
Exactly.
And you yes. not only have different technology, the car, forget the car. You've got different types of people, you know, Gen Z or yeah. millennial or
yeah, millennial
label it however
Gen
you
Z,
want.
They learn different.
They learn different. They interact differently. They
do they
think interact differently?
Or are we just changing as we get older? Are you becoming your dad? I'm sorry. I have to put a little humor into this because that's a conversation that's been as old as time. Carm, I was at Vision a few years ago, and I had started my role as a developer. It was just gathering as much information as I could, and I attended one of the instructors' presentations, and the topic was fascinating. It was dealing with millennials in the class environment, and there were quite a number of people in training there. And I don't want to make this negative, but there were a couple of things that really struck me. And one of them was they gave us a personality profile test where they asked us a whole bunch of questions, and I could see what they were doing. They were coming at it from different areas, and they were trying to figure out what generation we most were drawn to in our behaviors. And up to this point, I'd been listening to conversations about how do you handle cell phones in the classroom? I take them and put them in a box. And there's no purpose for a cell phone. And you know these guys are sitting down there and they're texting in class. And then somebody in the room would go, well, we teach them to use it as a tool. Go find me service information. Go find me a procedure. Find me a torque spec. Use that device as a tool. No, they can't do that. And we see that in shops as well. Some shops are like, absolutely no cell phones. Now we want everybody to do digital inspections on something very much like a cell phone or a tablet. It's finding out ways to incorporate the new. But anyhow, in this survey, a lot of folks my age in the room, and I was amazed at how many people identified as silent generation or pre-boomer. And that was classified as an authoritarian style. And then we're wondering why we have trouble with younger generations because they're two or three generations removed from that boot camp style and a different way of interacting with technologies and things around them. So I found that striking. Out of 60 plus people in the room, I think I was one of three that identified as Gen X, which is what I am, which maybe is why I kind of get a kick out of hanging out with millennials and listening to how they think. So
I think Gen X made the millennials.
Yeah. Yeah. It always makes me laugh when I hear guys my age complain about millennials. And I'm like, we raised them.
That's right.
It's all our fault.
So Jim, I want to go to your point. When I talked about, you know, different ways to learn, you said, let me jump in here right away. And I heard what you say. There are ways to incorporate the new. Is this what you guys are working on?
Yeah, so I know you've had conversations with Chris or listened to Chris talk about, you know, a new thought process in training and offering a way for technicians to learn and go down a career path and continue learning and earning an actual certificate for an area of repair. So let's say a certificate in automotive electrical. the thought process is actually to go down the aircraft certification process. So I go through school and I go through, you know, some online training and I go through some, maybe some virtual stuff with some interaction. And then maybe there's a practice session where there's a proof of the fact that the students have learned, we actually test that they're able to do these things. And then that student could potentially go before a certification process where they would have to be prepared to take a written test, answer things orally. So not multiple choice, but can you explain to me how this particular electrical system works on one of these five different cars? And then if you make it through all that, you actually demonstrate the skill live to that assessor. And if you've passed all that stuff, you're going to get a certificate that says, not only have you been to class, not only have you got the check mark, not only have you been coached by somebody to make sure you grasp it along the way and you're ready, but you've actually gone before somebody and proved that you can do all these things that we said you could do. And here's the skills that you've learned. And that's kind of that new model that's being tested and built out now is, you know, we know what shops are looking for and what do we want them to be able to do. And, you know, unfortunately, they show up and they don't even know how to verify they're putting the right oil in this car. But if that's part of what the industry thinks they should know, then we need to teach that and test it. The phrase Anthony likes is getting away from the sage on the stage and having the teacher become what a teacher should be. And that is the person who makes sure the student is comfortable with the knowledge and they have learned and incorporated what they've been taught.
Sage from the stage. So that's got to be a big part of this whole, you know, future technician strategy, the big change.
We aren't comfortable with change.
No. And that's, and I fought that at the technical school. This is the way we've always done it. Well, right. I have high school students. They're younger. They learn differently. They absorb this information sometimes much faster than you realize if they really want it. So we either need to change and provide them with that information the way they're used to absorbing it, or we're going to disappear. They're going to find that somewhere. So we've got to figure out a way to provide it to them.
Okay, guys. So what's the role of the teacher going to look like?
I don't think we should try and define it moving forward. We should roll with it. We have to take some of these new technologies. Matt, you're being really quiet because you're sitting back, and I don't want to talk over you because this is a passion topic for me. The first time I met Anthony years ago, I had a conversation with him about how frustrated I was with how things were taught back then. Everything's taught in a silo. The electrical person teaches the electrical, and the suspension and steering person teaches this, and the hydraulics person teaches that. And I'm like, it's all the same when you're talking physics. Why do we separate it out? I can describe Ford EGR with a DPFE as an electrical system. And if you know electrical systems, you should be able to figure out how this DPFE works. And people look at me like, to borrow somebody's phrase, a goat looking at a watch. And they're like, what do you mean? And then you explain it to them. And they're like, oh. And so that was like one of the first conversations that I, you know, when he was talking about designing curriculum that we had years ago.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the whole purpose of science is it keeps uniting things. You know, we like to separate things out, but then you find out as they progress, they get to be more and more the same. So we don't, you know, we have biology and chemistry, but they're kind of disappearing with the surgence of quantum mechanics. So they're just finding more and more are the same than different. And I think that's kind of what you're going to on the car is this is hydraulic and this is electrical, but there's more similarities than you think. Maybe not perfect similarities, but enough to be very effective at diagnosing and repairing this vehicle.
I will say that when Jim and I were talking about the subject, the reason that Matt jumped to my mind right away was that it was Tech Talks at Vision. Is what are the trainers of the future going to be? Some of us are getting old. I'm speaking for myself there. We need new blood and new ideas. So, you know, we saw some along with me. We got some new blood out there, which we need.
Maybe we should promote the fact that I've done 9 episodes with 3 technicians, Bob Hype, Peter Landry, and Matt Fonslow. 9 episodes. We call it Technician Talk. And they don't hold much back.
No, they're some of the best ones. Whether I agree with them or not, they're some of the greatest
discussions. It's just like this discussion, agree or not. I mean, these things need to be said. They need to be brought up. We need to discuss this stuff because, hey, we could be wearing tomorrow's fashion today by these thoughts that you guys have or are working on. To a degree, terrible, terrible thing, the pandemic. Terrible. But I think we're going to look back and say, we reinvented ourselves. We pushed the envelope. We didn't think outside the box. We broke it. And you're smiling, Jim, because that's you. That's what you want to do, right?
I'll sometimes get in trouble for my sayings because they can be a little brutal and direct. One of them is, I'm not here to herd cows. I'm here to make hamburger. and I don't want anybody to take offense to that, but it's like, why do we continue to do the same thing, especially if there's already a conversation of it's not working? If it's not working, it's like, I'm going to put the third set of spark plugs on this vehicle and this misfire will go away eventually. Yeah, when the engine's worn out and quits running. But the definition of insanity of doing that same thing over and over. And so we have to look.
Expecting a different result.
We have to look for those opportunities to go, hey, let me rethink this. You'll hear us older instructors, we tend to rebel against new technologies sometimes. And I've been told by a lot of people that I'm kind of weird because even at the age I am, I'm like, oh, I love computers and I love this and I love that. And I still game. But where we go is, oh, you can't learn anything off of YouTube. And there's even a joke patch about a YouTube certified tech. But look me right in the eye, Carm, through this virtual camera here and tell me you've never gone to YouTube and looked up something to fix at your house and it worked.
And 10 times or more.
Oh, okay. And so we have to acknowledge that that's our current reality. Don't be offended by it. Embrace it.
Yeah.
And I think that plays into what you're saying. Maybe what, you know, hopefully, or at least I'm going to try to attempt to sell you on, I was hinting at earlier with, this is kind of skewing a little bit to the younger generation, those coming in or that have only been in this trade for a while. If they don't have that mechanical, maybe aptitude, but the ability to picture something in their head through experience that's mechanically related, when they're reading through a procedure, how do they reference that? So those of us that grew up in our generations and earlier, you could argue we spent more time outside, or mom and dad, grandpa, whoever, the neighbor, spent more time fixing cars or their lawnmower, or if their bike broke, you know, an adult fixed it, or the teenage kid down the street, and you can watch that and you develop this, you know, imagination of how this is going together, and you can relate to that. And if you don't have that experience, it's really hard to read through that procedure and imagine it in your head what's going on. But if you can see a video of it, I can't picture this. What do they mean? Where is this? How do I reach that? Okay, well, I'm in a legitimate, and I don't want to insinuate YouTube's not legitimate, but I'm in my professional service information doing it right, and I can't picture it in my head, and now I go to YouTube so I can see it happen. I'm not trying to learn the bullet or anything. I want to see how this is done, and now I got it. I know what they're talking about now, and I'm trying to build up that imagination, if you will, or that, there's a technical term I had on the top.
Mental model.
Spatial thinking, that type, the ability to construct that.
You know, to the point on YouTube, we've done a couple of podcasts on YouTube. We've had Matt, Paul Danner on, and one of the conclusions was that it's a great tool. I remember getting on, I had a dryer to fix, so I got on YouTube, I found out how to fix it, and it was a circuit board thing, and I actually soldered something, and it was just so cool because I'm mechanically adept. That person who was telling me about it didn't trash the appliance repair business. And we've discussed the fact that there's a lot of YouTubers out there, and yeah, it's a resource for information, but they weren't, you know, there's just a lot of them trash the local technician down the road and say, if they can't fix this for, you know, in a half hour, they're incompetent, don't go to them. That is just not healthy for our industry, but we can't prevent, you know, the occasional do-it-yourselfer down the road that discovers something and he wants to put it on YouTube and hopefully find his $1 million YouTuber career. So to your point, getting information from YouTube, I don't think it's ever going to go away. Maybe we need to figure out how to control it, right, Jim?
Yeah. So Anthony's actually in chat, and he suggested we need to have a peer reviewed YouTube or Google page. There's a Google Scholar for only peer reviewed responses to searches. So could we have a Google Auto?
Well, that, I've argued for a while that you know, with our help and, you know, our drive, you know, us being the repair trade, that might be where Diagnostic Network could really head or have a part of that. Yeah. We upload videos or find links to legitimate videos and they get reviewed, and that is now a, you know, reliable resource to that. And going back a little bit, looking at manufacturer information, service information.
So who wants to take this on? Should we call Scott and we bring Scott on right yeah. now?
He's probably on right now.
Maybe he is. I should search for that. We should bring in Anthony. Anyway, no.
But the OE service information has show here more today. Videos now.
Another time.
All of you guys should be on here.
but you know what, Carm? I'm getting to know you more now. I've been kind of watching the show. I've been on some of your Facebook Live events, a number of them actually. What you do here has, I will admit, influenced my thinking about a good way for us to interact in the virtual environment. And so my passion is about not having a webinar with 1,000 people all online just watching a video, which is one piece of learning. It's a way to get information. But then having the smaller groups like this, but it could be larger, of people talking and hashing out ideas and setting rules and making sure people understand. And it's like, you know, there are things that the older technician can bring to the younger technician from an experience or mental model development that's not being taught anymore, but we can explain some things. So like, oh, I have this car and I've done in-cylinder pressure analysis and I found that a cam was off and it only had misfires on that side and the misfires only happened at idle. Well, my mental model instantly went to, this is why we designed variable timing on camshafts, is because before we had to make trade-offs. If the overlap was wrong or the lift and duration was wrong, we got a poor idle but great high-end performance. But how did they idle? Like it was misfiring. And so in my mind, I know what's wrong with this car looking at the trims and looking at the behaviors before I have to do any of the testing, if that makes any sense. But the modern way of not having that old experience of the Lopi three-quartered cam engine that as soon as you hit 25 went dead smooth because everything that you've owned in your driving career has had variable valve timing and you never experienced that, you don't have that piece of knowledge to plug into your thought process, but I can share it with you and it'll make sense when you put it together with what you've learned.
Got it. Thanks for that. I appreciate the comments on the show that we do here. You know, we repurpose this. You know, we have a few people that watch us on Facebook, you know, and of course, a limited run here on Zoom. But, you know, the whole thing, what we're doing is we're recording this as a podcast. It'll come out next Thursday. We'll repurpose the video up on the website. And then this whole discussion will live in infamy in the World Wide Web forever for people to hear. So boutique training. I was actually talking to Scott Shotton the other night, and I said, we got to do an episode about boutique training. And that's just basically, I need this, come here, I'll bring you my five or six guys or a group of people. And to me, that gets into small, tight, hands-on, face-to-face, intimate. And I do believe that if we're not doing it, boutique training needs to be there. And I think guys will pay whatever they have to pay to stay up and on edge to be sure that they're learning the latest stuff. And I throw that out just for the FYI of it. So while I've been thinking all of you, and one of the questions that I ask is, what is the role of the teacher? And I listened very well. And here's what I wrote down. A teacher could be a mentor, an advisor, an education consultant. And, you know, maybe that's the role that needs to change, because it's not going to be what we're going to go out and do each and every day. You may go out this week and have one role, and the following week in a smaller group and a bigger group. Are you guys prepared to make these kinds of leaps or changes?
I think so, because I'm usually out so much. Sometimes I'm teaching the same class 4 nights in a row, and night 1 might be 30 people and night 2 might be 4, and it becomes a completely different class. I can speak for myself and Jim. We've already done that. We're ready for that.
A lot of it's the egos. When there's a large group there, your ego is a lot less likely to, or much more likely to get bruised asking that question. Or in the smaller group, you probably feel a lot more comfortable.
I will also say one of the things that I have noticed from these webinars that we've done is we get a lot of questions that I bet you a guy would never ask in person. Yep. Let me throw that up there. They can even ask it anonymously. Our polls where we're asking questions are anonymous. So we get interaction that tech, whether he's really young or super experienced, never in a million years would want to dare ask in purpose and admit he doesn't know or doesn't understand something. So I think there's some benefits to this.
So in the CarQuest studio that you guys have, Jim, do you see a lot of this, you know, intimacy going on where the camera zooms in under the hood or, you know, on the scope and you've got multiple shots going on? I mean, I know it would require a whole lot more people to pull off something like this, but it seems like that's where the future needs to go.
I don't think I'll get sideways for this, but we're actually planning a more of a demonstration piece next week.
Theater. It'll be the CTI theater.
That's where it's going. At the R&D center, we have the ability to stream out the presenter, stream out content, stream out a live camera underneath of a car, like that could show the hookup to a scope and then switch to the output from the scope being fed into the stream.
Yeah.
And then you have an actual studio switcher where you could do that window in window and transition between the two while you're having a conversation about what's going on. And nobody's in the way of the 10 technicians that are there. We see a lot of capability for it. You know, what about the concept of with new technology, can you support an instructor from a distance as a separate resource? And you know how that works because you've been doing this stuff with people from, you know, I'm in one state, Rich is in another, Matt's in another, and you're in another. And here we are, piece of cake. Exactly. And so I could be sharing something with you on this car that I'm working on here, and Rich could show, hey, I've got this one here. And the opportunities are basically limited by our imagination, but we have to be willing to go, it's okay that we're not teaching it exactly the way we did 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that leads to something that we were talking about in our meeting before this, earlier in the week, the car side training. Just-in-time training. This is nothing new. This has been around a long time, but it usually was on the phone, calling up a hotline, you know, or arguably calling up a buddy. But now with technology the way it is, there are companies out there already that if you purchase their equipment, you put in a request and they call you through the tool. And now with the camera on the tool, access to the internet, all of that, they can literally, they have the ability to, whether they do or not, I don't want to say, I don't know, but they have the ability to literally run you through a short course specific to the vehicle you're working on, specific to the system you're dealing with, and show you how to use the tool. Now, some people, some techs will just make the call. Here you go. Take it over. Do this. Help me. And they'll be done. That's all they want. You know, they got to flag the hours.
Will they learn anything?
No, and it's their own fault. Maybe the tech line operator or that operator, maybe they're not the instructor type. I don't know. But there is definitely the possibility, a very real possibility, I think very good, that you know somebody like me would be just absorbing all this. Like, oh, wow, I didn't know I could do that. Oh, that's how you do that. And I was thinking about this problem completely the wrong way. Oh, that's how that system works. And now I will probably never make a request for that again. Maybe something else, but never on that again. I got better that second. That car, that interaction, I got better immediately. And I think that's going to become more and more common.
There's so much that we left on the table that they're still on the table. I don't think we have solutions. And in fact, I don't think there's any solutions they have. I think it's an evolution that we're in. We're recognizing it. We know we've got to do something different on the end uptake. Technicians say, "Hey, listen, I've been spending hours on webinars, and it was fun. It was good. It was a little boring. I didn't pay attention. I'm not sure I learned everything. But now we got to tighten it up and discipline it. You know what I'm saying? It needs to be put a bow on this." And just because we checked the box to say we did it doesn't mean that we learned anything. And I think for you guys, your ROI on training needs to, it's got to be there ultimately. If not, the investment isn't worth it. But I also think our service professional wants you to make their people better. And I don't care if it's boutique, if it's online, if it's leader led. In my opinion, and I could be wrong because I'm not the smartest pundit in the room, I think we're going to have a nice blend going forward in the years to come. And I think we're going to have more options. But I think the owners should say, certify my people. I want to know that they know this. And I think that's going to separate the men from the boys down the road.
Well, because of that, I think with a supportive management, supportive shop owner, all the different delivery methods can play to all different sorts of learning techniques or learning, the way you learn versus the way I learn, that it starts to fall on, now it becomes the fault of the tech or the unsupportive shop owner to not learn and learn how to learn and, become better.
Rich Falco, thanks for bringing this to me, man. Instructor for CarQuest.
Anytime.
Technical Institute. Jim Kokonis, Senior Curriculum Developer for CTI. Thanks, Jim. Good stuff here today. And Matthew Fonslow, Lead Diagnostician, Shop Manager, Riverside Automotive, Red Wing, Minnesota. Matt, thank you so much for being here, starting us off, and for your sage advice, even though you're not.
That's hilarious.
Bye, guys.
Well played.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.